standing here on stage. Many thanks. Yes, can you hear me? Great, excellent. So many, many thanks that you're not on the rave floor dancing, but you're here. I think I would be quite more motivated to go to the dance floor raving right now. But great you're here. Just as always, when you're presenting results, of course, there were much more people involved in actually being here. So I just really want to say, Yannick, I haven't seen yet. Max, one of the Maxes isn't here, the other one sits in front of here, but they've just been as well involved in doing this, and please send news out. Yeah, hello from me. I'll just introduce a little bit in the police practice and the legal basis of the seizure of data memories. Let's just go blitz through the press. This is probably a very well-known case in 2021. Andy Grote was reported as a penis on social media, and then there was a search warrant for a house, and a lot of memes were appearing in 2023. At a demonstration in Leipzig, around 1,000 protesters were encircled by police, and about 383 smartphones were seized. And in this year, there was a case going to the German federal court. A woman who was stopped at a traffic control actually filmed the police after the police turned on their body cam, and the phone was seized immediately. So these are things that are in the media, but of course, they're only the tip of iceberg. Of course, the seizure of phones or all the data media now is just really turned into a routine measure by police and of the state prosecutors. They're doing it for a very broad range of actions, but even for things that are associated for light crimes. So, for example, in graffiti scenes, frequently they seized for smartphones to search the pictures to get potential proof for felony. And they are, of course, also seizing phones just when somebody was expected to be using their phone while driving, and then, of course, they just also seized the phone. So the highest criminal court in Germany has even worsened that situation. So, for example, in March, they decided that the police now can even force your finger to be put on the phone just in order to understand the data on this phone. This decision was strongly criticized, and this did have impact. So lots of defense lawyers were saying, leave your phone at home or deactivate this feature. And the decision is also quite problematic because the court was basing itself on a legal basis which wasn't meant for that. And this was for taking fingerprints to identify a person, but not in order to access the data on a device. So some numbers on the political activity. There is no reliable statistical basis for how often that happens, how many phones or how many other pieces of memory are being collected. But there was a research by netzpolitik.org for a few federal countries. So, for example, in Bavaria, it was one of 75,000 phones. In Rheinland-Pfalz, it was 14,000 pieces of media. And in Schleswig-Holstein, it was 4,496 mobile phones. So in Saxony-Anhalt, it was something you can see on this graph, so you can really see this is really being done on a broad scale. The impact on the impacted people are quite immense. So their property is being seized for an indefinite time. This is often because in police storage, a lot of devices are just lying around because the police doesn't have the capacity to evaluate the content, and it can take a month or years for them to hand it back. Or it could also, because there's just so much data on it, you also don't get your phone back if the data has been read, but only when the procedure has been completed as such. This isn't just a big impact on property law, but there's also a steep impact into privacy. So first the devices are seized, then they are unlocked, and then all the data saved on them is being read and at least twice copied onto their own storage devices. Afterwards, this data is being used to analyze it, and this happening in a very intransparent fashion, so the person that's impacted just notices the device has been seized, but then it's gone for a year. And then if the court case is getting cancelled, the person gets a phone back and doesn't know what happened, but it could have been kept for a much longer while in case really a legal case is being started. This, of course, has a very high risk of misuse. There's no real clear control of what the police is doing. Is, of course, it's possible that behavioral communication or personality profiles are being made, and this can give impact detailed insight into highly protected information, such as health data or sexual orientation data. And of course, that also means seizure of third parties is going to be impacted. So if you've been communicating and writing to other people, those people's data is also impacted. And of course, it's especially a problem if the phone is also being used in a situation that is with your phone in a business purpose. So for example, you're a lawyer or you're a journalist, and then your phone is being seized. You may think this is quite a deep impact into the basic law of these people. So no, there just isn't really a basis like this. It's not really surprising, because the legal basis that the authorities are, so this is the seizure procedures, they are from the year 1877, and they haven't really been changed since then. So in 1877, that was the time of the German Reich, and there was a German Empire, and Bismarck wasn't really thinking about that there's so much data on modern smartphones. Because at this point, communication was slightly different, more like this, as you can see here on the picture. Okay, let's have a look at this guidance in detail. So the core legal basis is the paragraph 94. I know it's a bit late, but I think this is quite easy to read. And it shows how underregulated this topic is. Paragraph 94 says that items which are being required for the research into the veracity of a legal case, it doesn't say devices, it doesn't say how much the data can be used. There's no information on data access, and that's not acceptable from a basic law requirement, because of course there has to be a clear law regulating this, and there needs to be clear and also protection clauses. The requirements of the seizure law is very, very basic. There's just an initial suspicion required for any kind of legal case. So there's not a specific definition about a specific crime. Any object can be seized, even a smartphone, if it has a case for relevance for the search. Or it could be always the case for smartphone. It could always be location data or text message data. There's just one limitation, which is the requirement of a court, which means that any seizures need to be mandated by court. However, the court is just checking if the device as such is acceptable But afterward, it's just an executive question how the device is going to be unlocked and which data is going to be read from it.
Now to Viktor with the technical explanations. We thought we'd give you a general broad overview over the technical state of the art. So it depends on the model of a device. One group of devices are iOS, Android, and Mac devices. They all share a file-based encryption. It's not the entire drive that's encrypted. There is a difference between before first unlock and after first unlock, after a restart of the device. It's called BFU or BFU. And in the after first unlock state, there is the difference that after being unlocked, the data is already decrypted and it's easier to access that data. With iOS and Android devices, if you have the PIN code, you have access to photos, chats, whatever, but not everything. There are many system files on these devices that you can't access even with the PIN code. If you want access to every file on the device, then you need vulnerabilities or so-called exploits. And the best protections against those exploits is done in GrapheneOS, where you can do two-factor authentication through biometrics and PIN. So you need both of those to unlock the device. And they're pretty well protected against USB exploits through the cable. So it's better than with other operating systems. With Windows, drive encryption is supported. Sometimes the key is on servers from Microsoft. Because that's bad, because if your device is seized and they ask Microsoft for the keys and they give it to them, you've won nothing. There's the difference with Windows laptops. Sometimes there are discrete trusted platform modules, DTPM, and sometimes there are firmware-based TPMs. The difference there is where the key is located. Normally, if you have a Windows laptop with with an encrypted drive, you turn it on, you put in your password, and then the operating system is there. And the decryption key is in the TPM chip. It can either be a separate chip, then it's a DTPM, or a BIOS integrated chip, then it's an FTPM. If it's a DTPM chip, there's the problem that the key can be grabbed while it was being transferred to the CPU. With an FTPM, there are vulnerabilities in the BIOS are enough to grab the key. Both of those are bad. Better is to use a pre-boot PIN, so you have to enter a PIN before the laptop unlocks. But empirically, most people don't really do that. And what's also a good idea is to use VeraCrypt, which is a program which can decrypt other things on the Windows laptop. But overall, if you look at Windows devices out there, it's not really a good idea to save data on those, especially data you want to keep protected. With Linux, drive encryption is usually shipped with the distros. There are problems with the so-called warm boot attacks, so if you've only put the laptop to sleep and not shut it down. It depends on the laptop, but that may be a possible attack vector. There are also problems if someone is able to manipulate the hardware, got access to the hardware. There are some attack vectors there. Attacks on devices like this happen through forensic software. There are different developers on the market. You might know Cellebrite, Magnet, or Graykey. MSAB as well. There are a few others. Overall, they mainly do the same thing. They develop programs that use security vulnerabilities to attack devices like these and to unlock them and get access to the entire drive. Kind of works similar to spyware, government spyware. You need knowledge about vulnerabilities and you need code that is able to exploit these vulnerabilities. The only difference is the attack doesn't happen through the network but through the USB cable, but the problems are mostly the same. It just is only possible if there are secret vulnerabilities that aren't publicly known. Cellebrite, for example, has matrices like these that show which devices this works on and which it doesn't. The green ones, they do have security vulnerabilities, so they can break these devices and grab the files from them. Here's a slide from February 25 about Google Pixel phones. And the good news are, if you've installed a current Grafino OS, they can't do it, which is very good free advertisement for Grafino OS. To put it very scientifically, I've put together this formula to think about whether someone's going to do something. It's a product of being allowed to do it, being able to do it, and wanting to do it. And they can and they want to, so they will do it. And he's going to tell you about some more concrete cases. I'm going to talk about a few specific cases. These two cases are relatively self-explanatory. In both cases, a politician felt attacked, and there were proceedings, and a raid was carried out. And in the first case, the state court declared the police raid to be unconstitutional. And in the second case, someone called Friedrich Merz drunk, and a court also claimed this to be unconstitutional. And the reasons for this was the raid not being constitutional, and not the crime not being bad enough to fit this rage. So it might be felony, but it's a really small punishment for this felony, especially if you haven't committed any crimes before. It will just be a small fine. With this, you can also see that courts can declare these police rights unconstitutional afterwards, but the question is why these raids happen at all, and why there is no legal basis to prevent this happening in the first case. It's not only a thing with police raids, but the police can also just seize a phone just because the person is carrying the phone in their hand. This is a case from this year where the German federal court, it was about a traffic stop. A woman was stopped. She filmed the police after they filmed her. Then her phone was seized for 3 months. And the federal court did not decide on the matter on formal reasons, but they still put out a statement to the constitutional possibility of this seizure. There were 4 main points that they brought up. The first point is there even a felony that happened? It is a felony to record someone without their permission. That was the case in this case. But if that's also the case with a public police intervention, that's not really clear. There was not a huge penalty for this felony. The court said there was enough other evidence, enough other witnesses. There were kids in the car. And it wasn't really necessary to seize the phone. And additionally, the person impacted by this was wanted to give up their PIN to the police to not get their phone seized. So we're going to talk about the case of Hendrik Torner. He's a journalist. We supported him in the first instance in a state court. The state court only ruled half in our favor, and then we, as the GFF, helped Hendrik Torner with the constitutional. The phone was forensically investigated. Victor is going to tell us some more details. So, just about the general case, in September 2023, Hendrik accompanied a demonstration. He saw a police action against others. He recorded a voice message with his phone and recorded the police. So his phone was seized. 3 months later, his phone was unlocked, all the data was read from it, and the data was evaluated. The evaluation was about the chat messages from the day of the demonstration he sent to find the voice message he sent. And the other interesting and worrying thing is they evaluated all the political activities and memberships of him, evaluating several private images and videos. So they were basically putting together a political profile of him, and that doesn't really have to do anything with the court case at hand. Almost a year later, the proceedings were ended. The reason for this was it was the case of someone being recorded without their permission, and for this, the offending police officer would have to report him. And he didn't do that, but the phone was still kept for 8 more months. About the court case, in April 2025, we put in an appeal. The court half ruled in our favor. 8 months later, the first 3 months were constitutional according to them, but the following 8 months of Syria were not. In July of 2025, we put in a constitutional request to the court, to the Federal Court of Germany.
Thanks. Right. So, just the core arguments of the complaint to the Federal Court. So, is the legal guidance from the year 1977 sufficient? No, of course not. It does require its own law that has its clear barriers limiting the actions of the prosecutors, because otherwise this would be a massive breach of privacy, and the evaluation of this data being carried out intransparently has a very high misuse risk, and there's no really limiting on very heavy crimes, just as, for example, the state Trojan or other measures. There is a specific catalogue, but just for seizure phones, there isn't. And there is no protection of particularly sensible or private data. For example, if there was communication with family members, or use like a diary or notes for yourself, this isn't really protected. This doesn't really fit that well, but there's something important to say. So we've looked at this phone forensically, and of course in the police, it was clearly saying it was done with Cellebrite. But what's quite interesting is this wasn't just a read-only access. So for example, we could show that they changed data in the settings of this phone, which is of course something completely different, just the symbol of, oh, there was a note and I had looked at it and I looked into this email. But of course, this is much, much deeper access, and of course, this would make it much, much difficult if this person, for example, was to be attacked with different spy software to kind of evaluate, because of course, here, there was already traces of a compromise. So it was really surprising and interesting, and we've put it into a note which has been visible on our website. I will also give an overview, but just as a summary, it's you could say that there's currently no real basis for this practice, and that would be in any case unconstitutional. But now let's come to international cases. All right. So just to give this a bit larger context, maybe we just bring on, there is a trend currently internationally for seizure of devices, but also to go one step further, but to actually install spy software. And I was good about to show you a few cases. For example, Novispy, which has been done in Serbia, which happened in the following way. So people went to a police station, and the device was seized. And via this access done with Cellebrite, they were installing spyware. People from Amnesty were able to research this and publicize it. And a little bit different is the Stern Mass Assistant. That is what was done in Lookout in China. This is an Android app that was installed by police to get a lot of data off the device, maybe something like Cellebrite Lite. The police has the device, takes data of it, but apparently the app remains there and has quite far-reaching permissions. This is an attack that CitizenLab has done not that long ago. So this was an evil twin of a legitimate app, which has just a lot of more accesses, which was being used by Russian secret services, also done as in the form of a seizure. That was us. So 2 weeks ago, we've published that we found a spyware from the Belarusian secret service, and we could show the entire network, which all samples we were seeing where the spy service sit. And also here, there weren't really weaknesses being used in the system security, but the police knew the security, but they were able to install that up. And what I find in generally quite interesting is that there is almost a second tier of spyware and state trojans going to happen much, much cheaper in development, because you just have to develop an app and not have to buy vulnerabilities and play that kind of game. But the accesses are quite intense. Even in Android, via an accessibility service, you can do a lot of things. And this is exactly what happened here. There's also a list online. So, as an overview from a legal perspective, so as a summary, you could say that this practice is threatening holistically the basic law, because the right for property, privacy, is going to happening, and of course it can have chilling effects on freedom of opinion and of assembly. If people can't rely on their right to communicate securely, and the police would be seeing very sensitive personal data, which of course the European Court of Justice also agreed. So in an Austrian case, it decided that for these kind of data accesses, it requires a specifically well-detailed legal basis. For example, it needs to be legally enumerated which kind of crimes this should be leading to the law enforcement being permitted to do this. So, for example, in Austria, the federal court also declared this as illegal, and the National Assembly then had made a re-regulation of this topic. So it clearly defined under which cases such an access would be allowed. There's lots of documentation, lots of search parameters have to be documented, and you have to say that these reforms wouldn't be considered fully sufficient, because, for example, the access of this data for very simple and unheavy crimes are still allowed. Maybe a few practical tips. I hope you will never get into this kind of situation, but of course you're not legally required to disclose your PIN, even if the police is giving you pressure, if there is no legal search warrant. If it's an urgent case, then of course you should get a court case and a court warrant to hand over the smartphone, and otherwise you can submit a complaint to the court, and you can request a return of the device. And you can do that on the basis of two things. First, that the measure itself, the seizure, was not making sense in this context, and also that device is to be given back. So just a general view on the technical basis. So Android Advanced Protection Mode is like a lockdown mode on iOS, which will bring additional security features. They're currently implementing new features in this direction, which should be protecting better for this. In principle, we would generally suggest you to use GrapheneOS, and if it is an Android device, then turn this mode on, because then the protection of this mode is going to get better. and if you've been impacted where such tools have been used, like Cellebrite, please tell them they should go to Research Labs, because maybe we find out which kind of security gaps were used for this, and then we've all got a good day.
So overall, if it is possible, it is possible with GrapheneOS. It is a very good idea to use a two-factor authentication to unlock your device, a combination through PIN and biometrics. So, for example, if someone films you entering a PIN, it won't work to unlock that. It won't be enough to unlock the device. And if they take your finger and put it on the phone, it also won't be enough to unlock the device. And the obligatory report 0 days. Don't keep these vulnerabilities secret. And if you have any friends that might be going towards the wrong route there, tell them to report those 0 days. Thank you very much.
Many thanks for this. So on the microphones, I already see lots of people are queuing up on microphone 3. Many thanks. So Signal has announced that they found a bug in Cellebrite and were putting in files that were using this gap. Have you ever heard of that?
No, so I would think that Cellebrite would probably have fixed that by now. Maybe, I don't know. It is very much plausible that in these forensic tools there are vulnerabilities and exploits as well, but I don't know anything specific.
Okay, microphone 1. Many thanks for this talk. So, are you aware of usage of Grey Key in Germany? And if yes, what kind of devices were used?
I don't know of any cases. Yannick, do you know anything? No, I don't.
Dann Mikrofon Nummer 4.
Microphone number 4, please. Yes, many thanks for the really interesting talk. I've got a question concerning the consequences if the illegality of the seizure has been proved, but the data has already been saved. Well, how can I do anything against this? Can this data still be used in court cases against me? And can I do anything on a civil law basis against that and request any kind of compensation or something like that?
So there is a right to deletion of your data, and there is a right for compensation, but the requirements for those are a little bit higher. So you need to prove that the seizure was unconstitutional from day one, and the data itself, it kind of depends. For example, the police are allowed to use things and evidence they found on accident. And if they don't need the data for a specific court case, they do have to delete it.
Okay, microphone number 3, many thanks. So I've heard a lot about Android and GrapheneOS. And so what exactly is about iOS and iPhone?
So from Cellebrite, you know, the support matrices only if they're leaked. But in principle, I think that current iPhones are still vulnerable to those exploits. So everything I've ever heard with Cellebrite, they have different feature models. There are advanced services in Cellebrite Premium and things. But in principle, I think that they'd still be able to unlock current iPhones.
We still have time for 2 questions. Afterwards, you would be available here in front for questions.
Yeah, so we will be here.
But afterwards, there's nothing happening in this room, so you're obviously welcome to come to the front. Let's do it like this. I think somebody's getting coming from the internet. Let's just solve that question first. Because people in the room have got the luck to ask this directly. People in the internet want to know what happens when doing a seizure if you give them the Duress PIN of GrapheneOS. Is there any legal impact of that?
That's a legal question. I don't think I can say anything about that specifically.
Okay, we still have 5 minutes, so great. Okay, at the back here, please. Okay, so my question is about the signal client body. On the signal client, is this more recommendable than signal itself because you've got an extra encryption, or is signal just by itself as secure?
I unfortunately can't say anything to that.
Another one from the internet. So if programs like Celebrite have access to compromised devices, isn't it falsifying its own devices?
Can you repeat your question? Sorry.
If Celebrite's access, read and write access, isn't compromising its own proof.
Yeah, that's the classic problem. The old thought model of forensics is we have a drive and we're going to make an image of it and not touch it. And of course, this doesn't work at all with modern smartphones. And this is a thing that could and should be massively criticized. This is very not concrete procedure being used here. There's a third-party tool from somewhere else, some random company being used. You don't know the source code of it, and it gives you a zip file, and then you have to believe that this zip file is actually a representative of the data on the phone. But if it is someone else, something else, you as an affected person by this have no way to prove anything at all. So it's just crap overall. So this is also relevant in the criminal proceedings, since it's a black box that just does whatever with the data, and it has to be decided whether the data that they want to use as evidence in the end is actually what is on the device and if the data can be trusted at all.
Last question from microphone one. Many thanks for this talk. More question that's a bit more practically. If I really understand this, turning the phone off helps. Having a complex PIN number helps, and maybe after 10 mis-entries, the phone wipes off. It really depends.
So it really depends on the model of phone. Something I can say, there are different approaches of these forensic software to break phones. One approach can be to just pop open the phone and turn off the lock, the speed lock of how many pins you can try, and then they can try very many pins in a very short time. Maybe a very complex pin will help with that. It really depends on the model of phone.
Okay, many thanks from my side, Davy and Victor, for this wonderful